Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. This is part of Cashflow 202, which is the more advanced system for people who want to be investors and business owners. Today I have the privilege of talking to Dr. Van Tharp, who is, I first heard about him because there's this book called Market Wizards. And Van is well known enough to be in Market Wizards, and written by Jack Schweigert. It's about all the people who do big trades or options and commodities, foreign exchange, etc. And he runs with a different class of individual, a different breed of individual that I've been exposed to. I first attended Dr. Tharp's or Van's seminar on trading simply because trading is a very important skill. It's an art as well as a skill. In other words, what trading is in my experience is, how do you know when to buy, how do you know when to hold, and how do you know when to sell? So what we'll be talking today about is the, you know, how, what's the right way to buy or wrong way to buy and the right way to sell. Because in my experience as an investor, I think some people have these experiences. I remember buying this piece of property one day for $18,000. And then somebody came along and offered me $48,000 for it. And I got so excited, I sold it. But a year later, he sold it for $68,000. I still remember going, did I sell too early? Did I sell too late? So the next thing that happened to me is I said, what I'm going to do next time is I'm not going to sell so early. So I had this other piece of property, and I think it was I bought it for around $30,000. The thing went to $60,000, and I said, I'm going to wait. Then it went down to $40,000. And I think most of us, in some experience, have had that where you've bought something, you've either sold too early, or you held on to it too long, and the price came down. So the reason we at Cashflow Technologies are very happy and honored to have this honored and renowned trader in our midst right now, he's actually a teacher of traders, is because trading is a very important skill. It's the ability to know when to buy, know when to sell, and know when to hold. As Kenny Rogers says, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And so welcome to this tape.
Thank you, Robert. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Before I go on, I'd like to read a little bit of Van's background and what he's known for. This comes from his book that I just read. The title of this book is called Trade Your Way to Financial Freedom, Van Tharp's Secret to Searching for the Holy Grail in the Market, Finding a Trading System that Works for You, Selecting a Time Frame and Market. So if I could read from the back cover, it says, Van K. Tharp, Ph.D., has been a consultant to traders and investors for over 15 years and has studied over 4,000 traders during that time. He's internationally recognized as a number one psychologist and coach for traders and investors. Dr. Tharp is a sought-after speaker, developing courses and seminars for large banks and trading firms around the world. He is the author of a successful five-volume home study course, a test designed to evaluate a trader's strengths and weaknesses, eight different three-day workshops, a monthly newsletter on systems and psychology, and numerous articles in industry publications. In fact, you just had a very nicely done article for you in Forbes, was it?
Yeah, it was in June this year, on people came to my seminar and wrote up about how excited they were about what it's like to be in one of these trading seminars.
That's great. So this is June of 1998 for those who are at home. So Van, before we go into the art and science of trading, would you mind telling the audience a little bit about who you are, your background, and how you got into this world of trading, and also what your PhD is in?
Well, my PhD is in biological psychology. It has very little to do with what I do now. It came from that process of thinking, I've got to go to school to get a good job, and I might as well go all the way to get a PhD. And I like psychology, so people who seem to be successful at psychology got PhDs. So I got a PhD, and I actually postponed my graduation by 1 year because I found that my colleagues who were getting ready to graduate were competing with 200 people for a $10,000 a year teaching job.
You mean 200 people with PhDs?
We're competing for one $10,000 a year teaching job.
10,000?
Yeah.
When was this?
This was 1975.
Not that long ago.
And
has it gotten much better?
Yeah, it's probably 30,000 now. So that really wasn't where I wanted to go. And I had a couple of episodes where I thought, well, maybe playing the markets is a way to go. And I'd lose my shirt. I mean, the first time I had about $20,000 accumulated, and that all disappeared. And then I found you didn't have to stop at zero. You could go in the hole in another episode. And it seemed like 90% of the trades I made were wrong. And I was smart enough, at least after the fact, to look at it and say, if 90% of the trades are wrong, it's probably me, and I better find out what it is that I can do about it. So my career began as a process of figuring out what I could do about it. Instead, I found that my best trades are putting money with the traders I've developed.
So you train your own people that trade your money now?
Absolutely.
So, Ben, would you agree with me that the science and the art of trading is an important skill that an individual should have if they're going to go into the field of investing in business?
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. How would you define trading personally? I mean, what is it? People have pictures of, you know, we saw that movie called, was it Trading Places or something with
Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd, right. It's about how they cornered, was it orange juice in the commodities market and all that?
Right.
So many people have seen that movie or movies like that. Now, is in your opinion, is that trading?
No. It has nothing to do with trading. It's just entertainment.
It's Hollywood.
Right.
But people have that perception, is that correct?
Correct. Trading is nothing like that. It's simply the art of going with the flow of the markets, buying when it goes up, selling when it goes down, and making sure you don't lose very much money in the process.
So when I attended your workshop in North Carolina, it was very eye-opening for me because your word is bias, and bias means an opinion maybe or a point of view mm-hmm. or a prejudice or a way of thinking. I was very surprised in attending your seminar on peak performance trading, and most of the guys in there were either individuals or they work for large banks or companies that handle large sums of money internationally. I was surprised that you told people that traders don't forecast. In other words, you know, today as the stock market's rallying up and down, everybody's saying, well, is this price going to go up? Is the Dow going to go up? Is the Dow going to come down? Will this stock do better? Will it do worse? A trader doesn't do that. Is that correct?
A professional trader doesn't do that.
So what do you think about people who forecast and say, I think the price will go up?
It has nothing to do with making money. Absolutely nothing. Because you get hung up into the bias of being right about your prediction, and that hampers you from knowing what the market's doing.
So this is very much a part, very big part of your book, the word bias.
Correct.
And I think we need to go into that and... because a bias is almost a psychological or personal or emotional or a point of view you take on the market. In other words, if let's say I'm buying for, say, IBM at $150 a share. If I think it's going to go up, that's a bias. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's a bias because you're forecasting as opposed to trading.
And traders don't do that?
No.
So what would a trader do?
A trader would say, IBM's going up. I'm going to buy it. When it stops going up, according to some criteria that they have, they'd sell it.
So they're not predicting it's going up. What you're saying,
they're
it's
watching
going
it,
up.
And it is going up, so they're buying it.
So a trader only buys
when it goes up.
And it sells when it comes
down.
The
reverse is also true.
What's that?
They would want to sell first when it's going down, buy it back later when it starts to go up.
That's not a short, though.
That's a short.
That is a short. So a trader fundamentally is not predicting. They're actually operating on the facts.
Correct. In observation.
Okay. That sounds very simple in theory, right?
And it is. Except psychological biases get in the way.
Psychological biases like what?
The need to be right, the need to understand.
Can you go into the need to be right really quickly?
You talk about it extensively in your book. You go through 20 years of school, knowing that you have to get 70% right to pass and 95% is an A. When as long as you've got profits that are much bigger than losses, you could be right 30% of the time and still make a lot of money. So being right has nothing to do with making money.
But doesn't being right also blind you? You're saying?
Absolutely. It blinds you totally.
Let's go back to the example. I'm going to buy IBM at 150 because I think it's going to... I got a hot tip from my broker. My broker says it's going to go to 200.
Okay. Now you're stuck there, and you think it's going to go to 200.
So what's wrong with that?
Right. Well, it goes down.
So what's wrong with that?
It's not going to 200. It's going down.
And what does the average person do then?
Yeah, I'm going to wait and hold it till it goes to 200.
So this idea that what I hear in a lot of the pension plans and mutual funds, I'm in it for the long term. You think that's suicidal?
That's absolutely suicidal. And it will undo many people in most of the United States as just set up for a massive fall.
Because they're...
want to be right.
They want to be right.
And they're biased to expect the markets to go up, expect 12% a year, or these days maybe 20% a year out of the stock market.
And so this idea that I am right will affect what you do, is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Anything else you can say? Because I think this is a very big point about this idea of a bias. Understand it. What else can you say about that?
Well, let me give you an example. I had a fellow who wrote a newsletter on a particular commodity. He was regarded as one of the world's expert on this commodity. And every day he sent out a fax giving his predictions on this particular commodity, and people paid big money for that. He could not trade that commodity because his psychological energy was so vested in being right about his predictions. He could trade other things very well, but he couldn't trade that.
So because he had made this prediction to the world,
he had to defend those predictions in his mind, and he couldn't trade it.
So what happens when you hear of these people who come out and say the Dow's going to crash or there's a boom ahead? What do you think? What goes on in your mind?
It's something to ignore. You absolutely, totally ignore stuff like that because it's meaningless unless you get hung up into it. And then if you predicted that the market was going to crash, I was hearing that 10 years ago, you've missed out on all the good gains. So you haven't followed what the market's going to do.
So what
you think the market's going to go up forever, and if it does crash, you're not ready for that either.
So that happens to a lot of people. They think the market's going to crash, so they stay out of the market. It goes up. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, it's going to go up, and then they jump in. Then you see it a lot, right?
That's a bias. And everybody will be in the markets at the wrong time, too. When the markets are ready to crash, everybody will be so excited about it, they'll be in it.
So one of the reasons I had to go against my bias, I said, I don't trade stocks. I don't do that. But after I read about Venn and Market Wizards, I realized that trading could be anything, right? It could be stocks, it could be bonds, it could be real estate, it could be Beanie Babies, Cabbage Patch Dolls, right. Collectibles. Trading is just trading.
And the fundamental principles that we teach are the same principles that you follow.
Right. So for those of you who are wondering what I'm talking to a trading expert here, is I went to Van's course on peak performance trading in North Carolina, and it fundamentally shifted. I didn't fully understand it, but I realized that my fear of losing caused me to predict a market top. And what happened was the market didn't top and it kept running. That's what you're talking about, a bias, right? So sometimes for some people it's the emotion called fear of losing that makes them make these wild predictions that may not come true.
Well, let's just talk about the fear of losing. I call it the loss trap. So let's say you don't like to lose. What happens when you don't like to lose is you won't take a loss. You won't take a small loss.
So that's what you were saying in the course, is that a loser cuts the winners and rides the loser. In other words, the moment you start to lose because you're so afraid of losing, you keep losing.
You keep losing.
Because you don't want to admit you lost.
And the bigger the loss gets, the harder it is to take. And pretty soon, you're not a trader anymore. You're a long-term investor.
Or you're a long-term loser.
Right.
And can you explain what you mean by a loser cuts their winners? You know what I mean? It's when the price goes up, they're so afraid of losing and they sell it early rather than let the thing...
The opposite part of that bias. The opposite part of the bias is you must have a profit. You must be right. So as soon as you get any sort of profit at all, you want to take it immediately because you're afraid of losing it. So you have a very small profit.
So that's the fear of losing.
Correct.
So the fear of losing...
The fear of losing the profit.
Right. So you're so afraid of losing the profit, you sell early.
Correct.
And then you're so afraid of admitting you lost, you hang on to a loser.
Correct.
And that makes you a loser.
So you have that means you have small profits and big losses.
I don't like that at all.
No.
I think I've done that a number of times. So what a trader does is cut their losses right at the winners.
Yeah. Cut your losses short. Let your profits run. That's the golden rule of trading.
Right. And I've seen this happen in relationships also when somebody says, well, my marriage isn't working. but I'll hang on to it. And so you make two people miserable instead of cutting your losses early sometimes. And I'm not encouraging divorce, but I see that happen in many other aspects of life. Or I've been at this job for 40 years. I haven't made a profit yet, but I'm not about to admit I made a mistake.
And as long as you're carrying that metaphor, my guess is there are a lot of people who get rid of good marriages because they're afraid something will go wrong.
Right. Or they get rid of a good husband or wife because they think something better might come along.
Right.
And that's where you and I probably connect as teachers, is that we understand that it's emotional most of the time. In other words, people who are afraid of losing, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, they lose.
Yeah. Whatever you want out of the markets, that's what you're going to get.
Okay. Can you explain that to me? In other words, I remember sitting in your course in North Carolina, and you were saying that the market will always give you what you want. Something along that line?
Exactly. And the example we just explained was a perfect example of that, of how people, if you're afraid of something, you bring it into your life.
So if you're afraid of a burglar comes in?
Absolutely. If you put out a lot of energy to protect yourself from burglars, that's what's going to happen. I had one guy, I remember, he was really concerned that the person you deal with, your broker or whatever, is going to rip you off.
And it happened.
He was so obsessed with this idea, I checked up on the guy who was doing his trades, and it was one of the worst crooks in the business. He had a reputation. He'd been sued a number of times. He had a really nasty reputation. That was the guy that this guy attracted to his life.
So the person who was so afraid of being taken was psychically, psychologically, whatever,
connected to a person who was going to take him, for sure.
Okay. Are there people who have a hard time with your point of view on this?
Sure, because the natural tendency is to think it's not you, it's all out there in the markets. So whatever you think is out there is really inside of you.
The other point that you brought up in your trading seminar is that a trader needs to be neutral to winning and losing. And that has been life-changing for me personally, because I'm one of these people who thinks that if I lose, I should throw a tantrum, and if I win, I should jump around and celebrate and make a complete fool of myself. And what you're saying, that the way to become a trader is to be psychologically, emotionally neutral to winning and losing?
Right. Within the framework of a sound methodology that has a very good payoff, so that your excitement should be whether or not you follow the methodology.
So you're into the system then?
Yeah, well, it's maybe 25%.
So this is the other part that Van made clear to me when I attended his course, was that on television today, you see a lot of people selling a system. In other words, this is my formula for success, how to buy real estate for nothing down, or I made millions trading little want ads in the newspaper, or how to make money in the stock market. Those are systems, and you're not making systems wrong, are you?
No, systems are important,
right?
But a small amount of overall success.
So that's why when somebody writes a book, this is how I made $10 million in real estate, that's a system, but
correct,
that's only 25%, you say?
Correct.
So what is the other percentage made of?
The other percentage is you, the you factor, the grounding in the idea of what you need to do to follow that system, controlling your emotions, controlling your biases, and also understanding elements of cash flow, the kinds of things you've been teaching all along and the kinds of things that are taught in the game.
Right. Thank you. And in your book, Trade Your Way to Financial Freedom, the first part of the book was fascinating because you talked about biases. And it's a new word for me, so I'm kind of playing with it now. But when you talk about biases, it's another way of saying a point of view, isn't that correct? Or how you look at it, what you think is going to happen, or your view on it.
A point of view, and also a psychological shortcut. One way of thinking about it is we have to go process a tremendous amount of information today, and the conscious mind can't handle that much. It can handle about 7 chunks. So we develop all these shortcuts to make handling information easy, and most of those shortcuts are in the form of these biases that cause self-sabotage.
What are some of the other biases you wrote about in your book, Trade Your Way to Financial Freedom?
Well, the need to understand.
How is that bad?
If you
or good? I mean,
well, if you try to if you think your objective is to understand the market, what's the market going to do so I can perfectly predict the market, you're not going to be successful. If it's to understand your system and how it produces profits, that's totally different. But if you're trying to understand the market and understand what every trade's going to do, you're doomed to failure.
And in your book, I'm not sure it was in this part, Need to Understand, but, you know, on television, in the paper, or let's say the Dow drops 300 points, the need to understand is then some reporter says, well, it dropped because the Asian economic crisis and this. Is that part of the understanding that they need
to explain? Well, you have to know how that works. What happens is people want to understand, so the media thinks that's their job. So if you're in the media, you're going to, say, call somebody up who...
You think is an authority?
Who you think is authority. That person has two drawers. One drawer is full of good items, and one drawer is full of bad items. The market goes down. He pulls out the bad items drawer and reads some of the things that's going on and says that's the reason the market dropped.
The reason the market dropped is because the IMF failed to give money to Brazil and unshakenness, and the market responded in kind. That's what they say.
Absolutely.
And you go, ah, now I understand.
Now I understand.
And what is a trader trader's point of view on that?
You don't care. What's the market doing? It dropped today. Is that enough for me to get out based upon the rules that I've set up for myself? Yes or no, depending on the rules.
Okay, so what you're saying, a trading system is more important than chasing the market.
Absolutely.
So what would you say are the fundamentals of a good trading system?
Well, you have to have some method of getting in, and that's probably the least important part of it. But that's a bias that's mostly focused on that.
So what you're saying is that you wrote about in your book also how you go to these big trading conventions or symposiums, and the people that have the most attendance, the speakers with the most attendance, are the people who say, this is how you enter the market. That's what everybody wants to know.
Right, which has to do with prediction and thinking the way to success is to find the right stock or to find the right commodity or to find the right timing. It has nothing to do with that.
Okay, so what's the
next? So the next item is having a way to get out, to cut your losses short, your stop, which means whatever it is, your losses are small.
A winner will take losses, and a loser won't take losses.
Correct.
So can you give me an idea of some ideas of how a stop or how you prevent or cut your losses short? Do you have any?
I can think of any number of things that could work. You might look at whatever market you're trading, what's the daily fluctuation of that? And if it drops by two times that or maybe three times that, you get out.
So you have a sell signal inside there.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's real simple. Or if it drops by 5%, you get out. Or if it drops by, there's any number of factors you can use, and it just depends on how you want to put it together.
So you need a system for entry. And you also need a system for exit. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and exit in two ways. Exit meaning it's not working, I got to get out. And then the other type of exit is how am I going to take my profits?
Okay.
And the idea is if it keeps going up, you want to be able to hang on to them as long as you can.
So that's what we call ride the winners.
Correct. And it might be, well, I'm willing to give up 30% of my profits. I mean, something really simple would be I'm willing to give up 30% of my profits.
So the thing has gone from $1 to $10.
I'm willing to give back three.
At seven.
Correct.
Okay.
And if it goes from $1 to $1,000, you know, now you're willing to give up $300.
$300.
Yeah. That would be a simple
system.
Example of an exit system where your profits are going up more and more all the time, and you're going to allow it to continue as long as it wants to do that.
Okay, that's called riding the winners.
Correct.
Anything else to a trading system?
Well, what I call money management or position sizing is real important.
And can you go into that for understand these are most people, lay people listening to this.
Well, really, how much? And you have to make sure that you're not putting so much on any one given trade that if you're wrong, you can't play the game anymore.
That's what Another part I learned when I attended Van's seminars, what you call money management, or
I've changed it to position sizing because position sizing is much easier to understand. Money management means too many different things to too many people. Position sizing just says how much.
And what that means is on any one trade, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket.
Correct.
So
you're putting as much as you can to allow yourself to remain in the game.
And that's what really was, I mean, it took quite a while to develop in the workshop. We only have a few minutes on this tape. Fundamentally, the way I remembered is if you have $1,000, mm-hmm. a person would say, I want to make 1,000 trades, which mm-hmm. which would mean their position would only be a dollar per trade.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fundamentally what you're saying?
Well, let's look at this. Imagine you had a bag of marbles, and in the bag there's 100 marbles. Say 99 of them are red marbles, and there's one green marble. And when a red marble's drawn out, you lose a dollar, which means 99% of the time you're going to lose. When the green marble is drawn out, you win $1,000. Now, if you have $1,000 to play this game, you are allowed to draw out, say, 50 marbles every day. Chances are, every other day, you're going to get that 1,000-to-1 marble, and you're going to make a lot of money. But that's if you bet maybe $1 or $2. If you were to bet $50 or $100...
For every trade.
Yeah. You'd be out of the game very fast, and you'd never have the opportunity to get that 1,000-to-1 marble.
So you
look at, I mean, look at that game, though. You're wrong 99% of the time, yet...
You still make a lot of money.
You can make a lot of money with that game.
So that goes back again to the bias of having to be right.
Right.
You don't have to be right.
Yeah, 1% of the time. If you, as long as in that game you have enough opportunity, and if you got to draw 50 marbles out every day, you'd probably never have a losing week, and your monthly returns would be fabulous, being right 1% of the time.
So what you're saying, a trader is not a gambler.
Absolutely.
And they're not a speculator.
They're not a speculator. They play, they are professionals, and they play a game in which they will consistently make money.
They always make, not, well, they consistently make money. They may lose parts of the time.
They may lose some of the time. They may have 2 or 3 months of the year. The kind of people I train may have 2 or 3 months of the year when they do lose money. Most of the time they're going to make money, and they're going to make much higher rates of return than you hear from most people on Wall Street.
What's some of the rates of returns that some of your traders are accomplishing?
I consider 50% a minimum.
On their money?
Yes.
You had two other things that I remember taking away from your seminar. One was called the low-risk idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was the rules, personal trading rules.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go into your definition of a low-risk idea and how it applies to broad trading?
Well, a low-risk idea is something like that particular marble game. Your winners are much bigger than your losers. And if you look at the probability of winning times the amount you'll win versus the probability of losing times the amount you'll lose, it comes up to a positive number, which we call a positive expectancy. And if you trade that at a level...
So what you're saying is the risks are not as great as the rewards.
Yes. And if you trade that at a level that allows you to stay in the game, that's a low-risk idea.
So you're not gambling at all on that. So the way I took it, was I came back to my little world of real estate, and I realized my low-risk idea is I don't buy any real estate unless it puts money in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't put money in my pocket, I still have some controls. And what I do then is mm-hmm. what makes real estate risky is a thing called leverage or debt.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes what I'll do is I'll put down more money to buy the debt down just so that my debt service or the monthly amount I pay for the mortgage of a month is less than what I take in from rent. So that's my low-risk idea. In other words, I don't understand people who lose money but say the government's going to give it back to them at the end of the year. To me, that's insane because the government can always change the rules on you. And the problem with real estate, unlike the trading that you do, real estate's a very slow trading game. I mean, it takes a long time to get in and it takes a long time to get out of it. So that's why, for me, after attending your course, I began to realize that controlling my income and controlling my debt were part of my low-risk idea. In other words, if I don't make money, I won't buy it.
period.
There's something you do that's exactly like what I talked about, though, where you are wrong a lot. It doesn't cost you very much, and when you're right, you make a lot of money.
It pays off in spades.
And what you do is you basically, when you want to buy something, you told me about this, you said, I go in and I make them an offer of half the asking price.
And I make a lot of them.
You make a lot of them. And you get turned down most of the time. But
yeah.
Every once in a while, you
somebody
hit
says
one.
Yes.
And you, yeah, and then you make a lot of money. So you are wrong many, many times. You get turned down a lot. You
That's
have
correct.
To get rejection a lot.
That's correct.
But every once in a while, you make a lot of money. That's the same thing as losing a dollar on a trade or losing $50 on a trade.
That's correct. That reminds me of my friend when he also went out with the best-looking women. I said, well, how do you go out with the best-looking women? I said, I get turned down more than you guys do. You know, he says, I ask, and I get turned down 1,000 times, but every so often one says yes.
And there's a psychological aspect of that, too. The more certainty you have, the more aggressive you are in that situation, the less likely you are to be turned down.
That's correct. It's called confidence, right?
And if you expect to be turned down, you will be.
Wow. So that's why losers lose.
Right.
And that's why people who play it safe don't win.
Absolutely.
And it's all psychological.
Mm-hmm.
So, Van, when I came back from your workshop, the thing I was very impressed with is part of your system are the rules, or the system is a set of rules almost,
mm-hmm.
i.e. a low-risk idea, i.e. cut your losses, ride your winners, and all this. What can you say about the importance of rules as far as the system goes?
Well, you have to have them, and they have to be guiding principles for the behavior that you have, and you have to know what these rules are going to give you in terms of return in the long run, and then you have to have the discipline to follow them, and that's the main thing that most people need to work on, is the discipline to follow those things.
And for those of you, the word discipline is a negative word to some people, but Peter Drucker, one of the great management gurus of America, he said management means discipline. They're interchangeable. And so we need to manage ourselves to become good investors and traders and to be successful. Would you agree with that?
And I would call discipline controlling one's mental state.
And emotional state, too, which
right.
is the same thing.
Yeah. So if you find that you become angry and you bring anger into your trading, then discipline is controlling the anger or getting rid of the anger. You bring fear into it, discipline is controlling the fear or getting rid of the fear.
Let me ask you this, because for many people, the reason they don't invest is, number one, they don't have any skill to, and they shouldn't, because they've never been trained to. But what happens to somebody where the fear of losing is so great, which causes them to, they're going to play it safe all their lives, they diversify, they don't take risks and all this, it's paralyzing. What would you say to somebody like that?
Well, the first thing that's going to happen is those people are probably going to put their money into banks, CDs, earning 3 or 4% at this point.
Or a bond mutual fund.
And what they don't realize is those things have risk, too, and they are not even looking at the risk that might be there. So if you're in some sort of bank in CD, and suddenly the dollar goes down against every other currency, well, sure, you're earning your 4%, and the value of your dollar is decreasing so dramatically that you're really in a very, very bad situation. If you're in a bond mutual fund and bonds go the wrong way, those funds will go to zero or close to it.
So it could be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
You're so afraid of losing that
you're so afraid of losing, you'll lose. And the chances are the people who are the most afraid of losing are the ones who are going to lose big.
What I thought was also very interesting when I attended your course was that you said that people had ceilings on how much they could earn, and sometimes people hit that ceiling and then somehow self-sabotage or something kicks in and they lose it again.
Right.
Or they make money and they lose, make money and they lose. And that's part of what you take the super traders on, so they go unbelievable amounts of money. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me about some of your most spectacular students?
Well, there's one example that ceiling fits perfectly.
They make it and lose it, make it and lose it?
Well, when this fellow was maybe 10, 12 years old, he had a goal of being a millionaire by the time he was 25. He put up a sign on his mirror that said, when I'm 25, I'll be a millionaire. His mother tore it down and said, don't be silly. He became a millionaire when he was 25 in real estate development, and then he lost it all and went into bankruptcy. When I saw him, he'd started trading. He'd become a millionaire again.
As a trader this time.
As a trader. And all these same feelings were happening, like he was going to self-sabotage. He had all the internal feelings were happening. So
his past was haunting him, or he couldn't shake it.
This whole idea, it was kind of like his mother's voice. You can't do it. This is silly.
Oh.
So we worked on that. And within a year of that initial thing, he had something like 25 different entities, 125 employees, and maybe a $20 million net worth.
Then within a year?
Within a year or two. Then we had to do some more work where he got rid of most of that and focused on what he was best at.
You got rid of his self-sabotaging or self-limiting thoughts.
Well, he got rid of his expansiveness on focusing on all these different things because all these businesses were loading him down. So he ended up working on what he loved best, which was the trading part of it. Now he's pretty close to $1 billion. He makes at least 50% a year and almost never has losing months.
He's part of your super trader program?
Right.
So, Van, I know you don't like to necessarily work with novices, but you do. You're big hearted enough to let guys like me come in. But you've also told me about a program you have where you can take somebody who knows, you know, has some fundamental skills with computers and things like this and has the emotional tenacity or the maturity to handle what you do, whereas you take them from a novice up to a fairly good trader, and then if they're trustworthy, in other words, you can absolutely trust that they will follow everything that you say, that you have a program where you'll raise $1 million so that that'll sort of bankroll them or fund them to begin their whole trading program or something like that.
Right. It's a four-phase program. And the first phase is where they get the basic information down.
And you already have a big booklet for this already, don't you?
Right. There's a core. Well, there's four parts to it. There's a course on the trading process, which is my home study course. There's a set of tapes on system development. And there's two seminars, the seminar on peak performance trading, which has to do with the psychology and the self-sabotage, and the seminar that you and I do together sometimes on wealth.
On long-term wealth.
Right.
But what you're really onto is the self-sabotage, the psychology.
That's the emphasis of this, is understanding all this information and especially understanding how you are responsible, and you, which means you can do it.
Right.
How anybody can do it if they assume responsibility for it.
But you want somebody who's trustworthy to maintain their self-sabotage.
Well, you're talking about the first phase.
Right.
When you pass the knowledge test that's at the end of this, then you go on to develop a plan to do it. That's the second
thing. Right?
Business plan. And deal with all the psychological issues that come up in developing that business plan. Then once you have the plan and I've approved it, then you've got to prove that it works, to prove that with your own
money,
prove with your own money that you can make money. When you've proven that, then I'm willing to put my money with you, and we give you $1 million to show that you can really do it. So you can do it with other people's money.
And that's another leap of faith also.
Correct.
There's some people who can do it with their money, but when somebody else's money is given to them, sometimes they choke also with that, right?
Right, but I think people who reach this level have done enough psychological work that I'm not that worried about them.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to put my money with them at that point.
Right. But isn't it true that some people can trade other people's money, but they can't trade their money also?
Yes.
So those that's mean by the psychological blocks or reversals, whatever they are.
And those are strongly emphasized throughout the whole program. It's the number one aspect of it.
Well, it sounds like to me what you're saying, that the ability to be a good trader is 99% psychological?
Mm-hmm. 99% psychological.
And 25% is being able to follow one system.
Right. I mean, even the system. You have to find a system that's right for you. It's not right for me, or it's not right for Joe Blow. It's the one that's right for you, that fits your temperament, fits what you want to do and what you want to accomplish within the guidelines we provide.
So once you find this person and you certify them, and you basically they have to be trustworthy to you.
Correct.
At that point, you'll raise $1 million?
Right.
Well, that sounds like an interesting program.
I think so.
Trading is, like I said, an art and a science, and you've spent much of your life teaching some of the best traders in the world. But for the average person out there, what advice could you give them so they can practice, and I do mean practice, you don't just get it at one time, How would you say they can practice their skills to becoming fundamentally a better trader in everyday life?
Well, the first thing I'd recommend is to have a coach or mentor, and it could be somebody that you admire and you at least read their books, figure out how they do it.
Or they're successful at what they do.
And who is successful at what they do. And perhaps they're somebody that you can watch and study on a very intimate detail. That's the ideal mentor, and that's one of the keys. The second is whatever kind of strategy or methodology you have, be sure at any time that you get into a position, whether it's a real estate building or a stock or whatever, know when you're going to get out.
Have an exit strategy?
Have an exit strategy. Know what your worst-case scenario is, because most people get in the markets and they get in their mutual funds or whatever, and they're going to sit on there and hold it forever. And I'm not predicting anything for the market. I'm not saying it's going to go down, but if it did,
you already have a strategy.
You gotta have a strategy for how to get out. So
it's called cut your losses, right?
It's the most important thing you could do.
Okay, good. What would number three be?
Number three would be to just have low risk ideas.
You cut your losses early. That's a low risk idea.
Right, and something in some sort of methodology that overall will give you much bigger profits than your losses.
Okay,
and anything like that would be a low risk idea.
And so, like my idea of making sure my rent is always more than my expenses. In other words, I don't lose money on my properties.
That's a low-risk idea.
That's a low-risk idea.
And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of low-risk ideas once you understand the principles behind it.
Very good. And the next one?
Practice seeing both sides of the market.
I think that's probably one of the most important things you taught me, because a bias is oftentimes, let's say I'm afraid, so I'll see everything coming down, although the market's going up. And what I'll do is I'll miss that. So what you're saying is by seeing both sides, if I think it's going to come down, as I should practice, which is saying, seeing how it also could go up or...
Well, remember, somebody's probably taken the position opposite to you. You sold your position to somebody else, or you bought your position from somebody else.
That's what happens when I sell at 48 and it goes to 68.
Right. In many cases, the person who took the other side is professional and knows more about it than you. So what is it that they're saying? What is it that they're thinking? Why did they decide they were going to do it? If you begin to see both sides, you become much more in tune with the flow of the markets.
So I think that applies to a lot of things in life, being willing to see both sides of all issues. In other words, don't think you're only right and they're wrong, or you're wrong and they're right. Is be able to see both sides is a fairly good practice to have anyway.
And that brings us right back to that original statement of avoiding the need to be right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time. Like I said, if you want to know more about his book, Trade Your Way to Financial Freedom, who is it published by?
McGraw-Hill, and it's at just about every bookstore.
And it's a great place to start. And if I've attended Van's trading seminars, and for all of you who would like to someday become like these great traders or people who understand the markets, and buying, holding, and selling are very important skills. And Van is considered in the world today one of the best persons that trains professional traders. And if they would like to find out more about your seminars, how could they contact you?
Either through our website, which is IITM.com.
What does IITM stand for?
International Institute of Trading Mastery.
Okay, IITM.com. And
mm-hmm. Or our number, 919-362-5591.
So, Van, in closing, how would you summarize this whole world of trading as you know it?
Well, the bad news is wherever you are, you're responsible for it. You created it. The good news is you can create your future. You're totally responsible for your future, and you can create whatever you want.
So, Van, thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking to you today, and you're doing a great service by training people in this very important skills that a person needs to be successful in the financial world today.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you.